Got a little bone to pick with the programming department. Would it kill you every once in a while to play a little fog hat?
A little slow ride together. I'm just laughing because what a silly Friday tradition this has become for us here. Oh, man. Were you here at the beginning of all this, Sean, when we started doing this?
I wasn't. No, so I had to be. Actually, you're the one who reminded me, or not reminded me, but sort of filled me in about this tradition, because did it start with Aaron Rose, I imagine?
I think it was likely Aaron then.
Yeah, the board op that was with you for many, many years before I stepped in.
Yeah. What a silly Friday tradition. I like it. I love it, as a matter of fact. Okay, we've got an awful lot to do. Dinesh D'Souza is going to join us in just a few minutes here. But let's begin with a cancel culture update.
This is your cancel culture update.
Let's start at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where the student government this week approved a resolution calling for the removal of the Abraham Lincoln statue on campus. In the resolution, they said that Abraham Lincoln is a residue of white supremacy, and they want to replace the Lincoln statue with a statue for somebody who stands for the justice of all people. According to the students' resolution, President Abe Lincoln was anti-black, anti-native, and the resolution this week has passed. And so, Abraham Lincoln, you have been
47 years ago, canceled.
And then let's go to Virginia Tech University. Sean's freelancing there. I like it. At Virginia Tech, a professor there, David Brunsma, has declared that beer is racist. He has written a book titled Beer and Racism, How Beer Became White, Why It Matters, and the Movements to Change It. But he claims to provide a critical and interdisciplinary path to examine and understand the dynamics in the craft beer industry and the popular consumption of beer. He says that beer has always been bound up with race, racism, and the construction of institutions and identities that have led to intersectional inequalities. And so, beer, you too have been
canceled.
This has been a cancel culture update.
Now back to your regularly scheduled program.
Okay. Oh, man. I like talking to Dinesh D'Souza. Let's get to up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
A couple of months ago, I talked with one of my favorite national people to talk with, Dinesh D'Souza. He was telling us that he had a documentary coming out called Trump Card. It is out now, and here we are just 4 days away from Election Day, and Dinesh D'Souza joins us once again here on the Dory Monson Show. Dinesh, always a pleasure to talk with you, sir.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
All right, so give me your temperature reading 4 days out, because while everybody had conceded the popular and electoral vote to Joe Biden a week or two ago, it seems like things have tightened considerably in all of the important swing states. What are you seeing and hearing?
Well, I'm not a reader of the tea leaves. I don't pretend to be an expert in analysis of polls or any of that. But my sense is that the pollsters are drawn from the same socioeconomic community as academia and the media. And we're in an era where people are trying to tip the scales. Now, my guess at what's going on with these pollsters is they're very eager for Biden to win. And Biden is a ridiculous candidate. I mean, that's all I have to say. I've been in America for 40 years. I've never seen a more preposterous individual at the head of a major party ticket. So they've got to make his victory seem inevitable, because that's the only way to get an independent to go, well, gee, you know, maybe everybody else is voting for this guy, so maybe I should too. Otherwise, they're going to go, this guy can barely cross the room. I mean, he looks like someone either in an old folks home or a lunatic asylum. So it's kind of hard to see how Biden, compared to a dynamic, energetic guy like Trump, could even be taken seriously. So this is my reason for thinking that the pollsters are actually up to something a little bit nefarious, although I don't think it's going to work in the end.
Well, I mean, that's such a strong statement. I got to dive in a little deeper. When you say that Joe Biden is the most preposterous candidate you've seen in your 40 years in America, do you think it's just because of fading faculties, or are you talking about issues as well?
Well, I'm just talking about the combination of the fact that you've got somebody who is all clearly past the kind of edge of senility. I mean, someone who on a regular basis, you can't even call them gaffes, because gaffes implies a certain kind of normalcy that makes an occasional mistake. I mean, occasionally Biden comes up with a sentence that works, but gaffes are kind of his norm. The other problem is that we've now seen that he has been drawing on a deep well of corruption. I mean, there's just no other way to interpret it when your own son says, hey, dad wants half my salary, and I've been collecting money from the Ukraine and China and all these other countries. I mean, how else is one to read this? You've got this documentary evidence, and now you've got the business partner jumping in and saying, I've got texts, I've got phone calls. So I think that this is a very weak and unreliable candidate that they've ended up with. And it's kind of startling to think that they got him by pushing all the other candidates out.
Well, and as you mentioned, it's also, I guess, not shocking, because nothing shocks me anymore when it comes to media coverage. But the fact that a pretty credible story has come out now from this Bob Alinsky, and I mean, he's a Navy veteran who has plenty of verified, documented evidence. The mainstream networks, they won't touch this story within a week of Election Day. You have social media that is prohibiting the dispersion of this story. And when you see just the level of power that is aligned to achieve a certain political end, that's when things get really scary to me.
Yeah, you're quite right. And here's why they're scary, because there are thousands of reporters in the country. And we supposedly live in a free market. So you would think that some reporter at Time Magazine or the LA Times or even the Sacramento Bee would go, listen, everybody else doesn't want to touch this story. Yippee for me. I'll jump on it. I'll have the biggest story in the country. I will blare it across the airwaves. But see, why doesn't that guy do it? And the answer, I think, is really simple. He knows that if he did, his own boss would cut his throat. His own boss would destroy his career, probably fire him. He'd become persona non grata. He wouldn't be able to work in mainstream journalism again. So you know that there's got to be a chill breeze that's blowing through the entire media sector that is discouraging even one independent soul at a mainstream media outlet from taking this story and running with it. It ultimately shows the sense, you can kind of understand how societies sort of lose their freedom, even though we supposedly are making these decisions independently. Government isn't forcing it. The press is voluntarily censoring itself.
Well, we're seeing that today, Dinesh, with Glenn Greenwald, who is a left-of-center journalist, but he dared want to do the Biden story for his employer, which is called The Intercept. And he was forced to resign because his editor wouldn't let him do the story. So, I mean, we have some actual real life proof of what you just said, that you're not engaging in hyperbole, but this is actually what's happening in America today.
Now, turning to digital media, which you mentioned, now, these digital companies, they kind of all built their monopolies on a false premise. They led us to believe that they were more like the phone company, like AT&T. Hey, we're creating these marvelous digital platforms, and everybody's going to be able to find their long-lost friends, and there's going to be robust debate. Now, think about it. If AT&T were to start saying, we're going to be monitoring your phone calls, you're not allowed to say certain words, hate speech is not allowed on the phone, and if you do, even though you paid your bill, we're going to restrict your phone coverage. You can only make 2 calls a week, or we're going to cancel your service. I mean, people would basically shut the company down in like 2 weeks. Yeah. So they would never get away with it. But these scoundrels at Twitter and Facebook and so on have been doing these shenanigans now, and they've turned on us and taken these platforms that were supposed to be instruments of liberation and turned them into instruments of censorship and repression.
Boy, what a great point. Okay, we have a couple minutes left. We've talked about Biden plenty, but your documentary is called Trump Card, and you're making the case not just that Biden's bad, but that Trump is worthy of a second term?
Yeah, Trump is sort of he's an intemperate guy. He does shoot from the hip. He's got kind of this combative, scrappy New York style. But I think we're in an abnormal situation. And in an abnormal situation, you need an abnormal type of fighting strategy. I mean, Lincoln understood this, for example, with his general Grant. You know, people would say of Grant, oh, he's so intemperate. He ran his father's store into bankruptcy. He uses obscenities. You know, he's got all these character flaws. And Lincoln would reply, yeah, but can he fight? And that's all that mattered to Lincoln in that context. And Lincoln's point was, we'll take all the rest of it up after the Civil War. So the point I'm trying to make is we're not in a Reagan era when we were fighting a Cold War against a foreign opponent. We seem to be in this kind of cold civil war, and the other side has become kind of gangsterized. I mean, you've got paramilitaries on the street. You've got these deep state thugs who have never been held to account. They're threatening to pack the courts. You know, they're knocking down national monuments. I mean, at some point, you've got to say, well, the guardrails of society are coming off, and we need a serious effort to try to put things right side up.
Well, man, I have to congratulate you once again, because I just saw a story as I was preparing to talk to you that when your documentary came out, it was number one at both Apple TV and Google Play. So you're finding an audience for your message, that's for sure, Dinesh.
Well, this is the only one that has not gone to the theaters. It's straight to video on demand. And this way, you know, it's in 330 million homes. So the cool thing is just go on Amazon Prime, search for the movie, click and watch. It's up on iTunes, as you say, Google, YouTube, the movie site called Fandango. It's on a couple of cable platforms like Xfinity and Comcast. So it's really cool. I wish people watch on their big screen TV, because the movie was made for the big screen, but you can watch it really on any device.
And it's not just a rabid defense of Trump, because you've already acknowledged some of his shortcomings, but it is, and we are dealing with this in Seattle right now, the socialist agenda is taking over this city like wildfire, and it's really an expose of socialism and some of the forces that we are battling right now in America.
We think of socialism as economic confiscation, and Marx spoke of socialism almost entirely in economic terms. But I think what's interesting is that socialism today involves even more the suppression of civil liberty. And who would have thought we would have seen our basic right to free speech, right to worship, freedom to assemble, all being severely curtailed by elected officials who don't seem to have any qualms about sort of running roughshod over the Constitution.
Yep. No, it's very true. Well, it's called Trump Card. It's available on most streaming services. Dinesh D'Souza, it is always a pleasure to talk with you, sir.
My pleasure.
Dinesh D'Souza joining us. And yes, I've never seen such a suppression by government of free expression. And this is what we're dealing with here in the Seattle area, where if you do not engage in the groupthink, they're going to come after you. They will come after you. And politicians will lead the way. So everything he said, we are certainly seeing come to fruition here in our region. Okay, I have some breaking news that is just coming into us here on the Dory Monson Show.
The Big Lead. Breaking news.
I was listening to the traffic update at the top of the hour, and they said there was a significant police presence down in Pioneer Square. I have gotten information on that. Seattle police telling us that there has been a stabbing in Pioneer Square on this Friday afternoon. An unresponsive male with injuries transported to Harborview Medical Center. We do not know if he's alive. We know that they described him as unresponsive. Taken to Harborview. The suspect still on the loose. They're searching for a suspect. We have no identification, no description of the suspect that they're looking for. But the big police presence that we heard about in our traffic report is a stabbing in Pioneer Square on this Friday afternoon. Now, this goes back to what we've been talking about. While we have these city officials who try to peddle this fantasy that things have not gotten worse, that Seattle's as safe as ever. And yet you have stories like this on, I mean, it's a relatively gorgeous day here at the end of October. And somebody unresponsive at Harborview right now, best case scenario, still fighting for their life, and a suspect with a knife on the loose in downtown Seattle. So we'll try to get you more information on that. But that is the reason for the huge police presence in Pioneer Square that our traffic report told you about at the top of the hour. A stabbing in Seattle, and Seattle continuing to just become such a sad place on so many levels. We got to make some significant changes, gang. Significant changes. Because we have horrible people in charge right now. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
And so, what's the politician's solution to all of this? Well, they're back. The heroin death sites that they want to put around the city. They are ramping up the plan to have government supervise people killing themselves with heroin. It's unbelievable. I'll give you the latest details coming up as the Dory Monson Show continues. Song, just knowing that the weekend is upon us. I'm going to head out after the show today. I have an appointment with a butcher after the show. I've never done that before. Making beef braciole. I don't know how to say it. If my Italian listeners could. Well, because my wife and I decided just for date night to cook something fun. So I'm going to make beef braciole. But I was talking to the butcher a couple of hours ago, and I want a 10-inch long, kind of thin-cut beef tenderloin that I can then butterfly cut, and I will put salami and breadcrumbs and cheeses and goodness, parsley, wow, fresh cut parsley in it, and then you roll it up. But she said, well, we can either cut it, and then I said, I want about 2.5-3 pounds. She said, well, we can either cut it to weight or we can cut it to the 10-inch length, but we can't do both. And I said, I'll just come in. So I have to go in and look at the cuts before I buy today.
That's so
fancy. How exciting is that?
Yeah, that's fancy.
Isn't that exciting?
Mm-hmm.
I know. It feels very old school. It feels like something somebody would have done in Brooklyn in the 40s to actually go into the butcher. So I'm just very excited about all of this.
I always
You're excited.
I loved going to the butchers when I was a young kid and remembering them wrapping the meat in that butcher paper and the just the tape, just the old school way they did it. It's great.
I've mentioned often that I worked at this little tiny grocery store on Sunset Hill in Ballard when I was 12 years old. It's called Food Town. But they actually had a butcher, which was unusual. His name was Cleo, and he had a cabin on Lake Ketchum. I have no idea how or why I would know or remember any of that stuff, but I do. Are you doing anything with your nieces for Halloween, Nicole?
No, you know what? They're getting older. Halloween's sort of canceled this year. It's just not the same, and so they're leaving town.
Yeah.
And I might go up north to hang out with some friends up there, a small group, of course. And,
of course.
Kind of look around for some new furniture for my new place. And, yeah, that's my plan for the weekend.
You're now a homeowner.
Well, not yet. Cross your fingers.
Well, it's heading in the right direction. That's very exciting. I think I've mentioned this before, and I get kind of sick that I even feel this way, but as you know, I desperately miss when my girls were little. Now, I'm incredibly blessed because we all still get along with each other, so, and they all went on a little vacation with my wife and me last week, and it's different now. They work on vacation from the place we go to, but still, it's great. I love that we still like doing things together. But I miss when they were kids. And I think I've mentioned before that while I get sad about all the things that I miss when they were little, the two things I do not miss are soccer games, which I just never enjoyed, and Halloween. I couldn't stand Halloween. Even though we would get together, all the families, we'd get together, have a little pizza party, and then the dads armed with flashlights, because we don't have sidewalks in our neighborhood. So dads would be armed with flashlights, and we'd walk our kids around the neighborhood to do their trick-or-treating. And you would think that would be just a cherished, wonderful memory. And
yes.
I just never liked it. I miss it now, but I didn't like it at the time.
So I guess
you didn't appreciate it.
Back then, would you just dress up as the curmudgeonly old father?
Yeah.
You didn't really have to do a thing.
Right, exactly. No, I've mentioned before, I don't like the concept of Halloween. I didn't like my kids going up and asking for something for free. I feel like you should work for what you get. So I didn't like that.
Well, you are working. You're supposed to tell a trick or, you know, a joke or a treat or whatever. You're supposed to do the trick. I don't know. I had to do that in some houses. You had to tell a joke or do a trick or something.
Do a trick. What kind of stuff are you talking about?
I know. That was my history teacher. He used to make us do that.
Mm.
Now that I think about it, that was weird.
Well, the original concept was we will prank you, which was the trick, if you don't give us some candy. And so, you know, people would, or the kids would, you know, do nasty things to people's homes. So, I don't know.
Just don't think about it that much. Too much thought.
I won't. And then we always are prepared for trick-or-treaters. But they never show up because it's not a good walking neighborhood. So we always end up with this candy that we don't need. So I don't know, man. I don't know what to do about any of this stuff. My parenting memories, trick-or-treating today. Speaking of which, Seattle's bringing back those heroin death sites. Trick or treat. They announced this week Lisa Herbold. She's the one who wants to eliminate all misdemeanor crimes in the city. Man, even the Seattle Times came out against that in an editorial today. It's not just me. I mean, I find the stuff they do to be crazy all the time. But even the Seattle Times said this is a radical, ridiculous proposal. But Lisa Herbold, the person who's pushing for that, she also is pushing for a new plan for heroin death sites where government can watch people inject a deadly poison into their veins.
Now, a new idea.
The plan now is not to build standalone facilities, but to fund existing organizations that provide drug treatment services to provide this particular suite of services.
Yeah, they say that, but they're already providing those services where you can go get treatment. But heroin addicts, they refuse treatment most of the time. That's why when they offer services, by the way, that was from ComoNews.com. When they're offered services, sadly, they are in such throes of addiction that they don't want that. And so now they just want to give them a place to go and shoot up. And Brian Moran, he's a really good man. He's the U.S. attorney in our region, and he told Channel 4, there's no way that there's a violation of federal law.
If it violates federal law, the direction will be clear, quick, and consistent. Stop it.
Yeah, they're not going to allow it. But the ACLU's attorney, Mark Cook, told Channel 4 that we don't have to comply with federal law.
Local governments and states don't need to be in lockstep with federal law. And, you know, examples of that would be things like needle exchanges or marijuana laws.
So in other words, it is clear here in Seattle, we will do anything and everything to inject heroin into the veins of addicts. Trick or treat. Okay, coming up next, we'll count down our favorite sound bites of the entire week. Awesome audio coming up. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. It's good to be back. All right, now's the time when we like to count down our favorite sound bites of the entire week.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Week.
Hey, speaking of Halloween, and we were, a homeowners association has nixed this decoration down in Texas where the homeowner put skeletons on a stripper pole. And they said, you can't do that. The homeowner said, why not?
I was a little sad. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to take it down. I'm going to comply and I'm going to take it down and just not do this anymore. But then I got so much support off of Facebook. And I said, forget it. People are having so much fun with this and they love it. I'm going to continue to do it.
Yeah, so she's standing up for the skeleton stripper pole stripper.
My way of being creative and having an outlet. And there's no harm. I'm not hurting anyone. And really, just, you know, take it easy. It's okay. It's only Halloween.
This is why I hate Halloween, stuff like this. Also, this just in to Awesome Audio, Donald Trump at one of the rallies that he's doing this afternoon, talking or explaining a conversation with a friend about fame.
A friend of mine said, you know, you're the most famous man in the world. I said, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. No, he said, no, who's more famous than you? You are the most famous man in the world. What are you talking about? Who's more famous? I said, Jesus Christ. And I don't want to take any chances. So I looked up and I said, and it's not even close.
Oh, my goodness. And then you have a choice between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, who's also on the campaign trail today.
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize true and international effort to pressure.
I do not know what he's going to mobilize. And then finally, Matthew McConaughey. He did Joe Rogan's podcast. And he's just a very engaging celebrity. And he was talking about how one time he thanked God in a speech. And people he prayed with didn't clap for that.
I don't know. I haven't had difficulties. I have had, and I won't throw any people under the bus, but I have had moments where I was on stage receiving an award in front of my peers in Hollywood. And there were people in the crowd that I have prayed with before dinners many times. And when I thank God, I saw some of those people go to clap, but then noticed that, well, it's going to be a bad thing on my resume, and then sit back on their hands.
Oh, wow.
And I've seen people read the room and go, whoa, that wouldn't bode well for me in the future.
Mm.
If for getting a job or getting votes or what have you.
Yeah.
I have seen that. I've witnessed that. I don't judge him for it. I just wish, you know, that it seems like a silly argument.
Isn't that sad? People will deny their faith if they think that people will frown upon it. That's just sad. But I like Matthew McConaughey. He also talked about how the Hollywood left has gone too far left.
Some people in our industry, not all of them, but there's some that go to the left so far. As our friend Jordan Peterson, who's back, saw his video being back, that go to the illiberal left side so far that is so condescending and patronizing to 50% of the world that need the empathy that the liberal side gives and should give, to throw somebody's illegitimize them because they say they are a believer. It's just so arrogant. And in some ways hypocritical to me. So I haven't run into, you know, I haven't headbutted trouble on that, but I've always, you look, my career, I've pretty much gone my own path, and by hook or by crook, just trying to figure a way out into what I was doing. And I haven't measured or noticed where it has harmed or gotten in my way of what I wanted to achieve in Hollywood.
Somebody thinking for themselves. I love that. All right, I got to get out of here. Tom and Curly are coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times, and I will see you back here tomorrow. High noon. No, Monday high noon.
Nu är det slut för den här veckan, men ni ser oss på måndag igen. Hej då!
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.